Our guest at this time is Texas Republican Congressman and Dr. Michael Burgess, who represents the 26th Congressional District in the state of Texas. He's also a member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. And it's that committee which has taken a closer look at one of the most controversial provisions of the president's health care laws. No, it's not the individual mandate, but something known as the Community Living Assistance Services and Supports Program. And, of course, everything in Washington has an acronym, so it's known as the CLASS program. And this is essentially a program designed to allow folks on a premium plan for long-term care later in life. The problem, though, according to many Republicans and even some Obama administration officials, as it turns out, is that this could be a huge new program that taxpayers could get stuck with a massive bill for. And Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, Greg, it's great to be with you. This is the classic bait and switch in this program.
And in terms of the cost here, first of all, the way that this was pitched to the Congress and to the American people is that this is going to be a huge cost saver for the American taxpayer, about $70 billion. What happened?
Well, it was introduced at the last minute on the health care stuff as a so-called pay-for, a way to offset the cost of the health care bill. And the reason it's scored by the Congressional Budget Office as a pay-for is because you collect 10 years of premiums but only pay 6 years of benefits. So the first 4 years, the premiums are coming in and no one's collecting any benefits. The problem is then once the benefits start to be paid out, they quickly overwhelm the premiums that are paid, and then the out years, the drain on the federal treasury is massive, just as it is in everything else in Obamacare. So this was added at the last minute as a way to offset some of the cost of the Affordable Care Act, the misnamed Affordable Care Act, I should say, and their own internal emails at the time this thing was going through, it was described as a recipe for disaster. And let me just be very clear. I support the concept of long-term care insurance. I carry long-term care insurance myself, not a government program, but one that I pay for. My wife and I pay for it every January. It's a premium. It's a little bit tough, but it's something we do every year because it is the right thing to do, not for ourselves, but for our children, if we don't want to be a burden on them in our out years. And more people in the middle class should think about long-term care insurance. We don't think about it until something bad happens. And I would encourage people to investigate the affordability for them of a long-term care insurance policy. Starting at about age 50 is the appropriate time to do that. And if you indeed have that when you need it, you're going to be in much better shape. Now, this CLASS Act gives people the impression now that they've got long-term care insurance, but they don't. They're still going to be relying on the Medicaid system for long-term care. What they get is a little bit of a plus-up in the benefit for things like home health care, if indeed they are disabled for a long period of time. But the crux of the program, Greg, is you can just see right through it. It's a $50 a month premium, and it makes you eligible for $50 a day in benefits should you require it. Well, you don't have to be a math wizard to figure out that if more than just a few people have to access the benefit, this thing is going to be underwater very quickly.
In terms of the comparison between the program here, the CLASS Act, which they don't claim is taxpayer-funded, but ultimately it would have to be, as you pointed out, if in fact those people are drawing the daily benefits. You mentioned in the private sector, through the insurance companies, that it's a much better scenario. Why is that one not, as Kent Conrad called the CLASS program, a Ponzi scheme? What's the major difference?
Well, the other is just classic insurance. And one of the biggest public policy complaints I have about long-term care insurance is we don't provide for any type of deductibility for any income level for long-term care insurance in the income tax code. And as long as we have the complicated code that we have, and as long as we pick winners and losers in the tax code, it seems like one of the things that we would want to incent is a purchase of long-term care insurance. Certainly health insurance provided through your employer is tax deductible. Other types of insurance have a tax consequence. This should not be, we shouldn't punish people for doing the right thing and getting long-term care insurance, because the other side of the coin is if they don't have long-term care insurance and they have a medical condition that requires long-term care, they have to impoverish themselves and go on to the Medicaid system to cover those long-term care expenses. And as we both know, Medicaid doesn't cover those expenses, plus that it's the most rapidly growing part of Medicaid, which is being put under additional stress by the additional people added under the Affordable Care Act. So it's a very vicious cycle that is ultimately going to put the taxpayer on the hook for an incredible amount of money.
And your report even suggests quotes from Obama administration officials before the health care bill ever passed that this was not going to be financially successful. What can your committee do about this? You've done the report. What can you do about it legislatively?
Well, and here in is part of the conundrum. I mean, people like myself believe the entirety of the Affordable Care Act needs to go away lock, stock, and barrel, but it's failing to be able to do that, going in and trying to fix some of the more egregious aspects, particularly for something like this. Before it starts to, before we create a new entitlement, let's perhaps look seriously as to whether or not we should be doing that in the first place. I understand you can make the argument about the entirety of the Affordable Care Act. I mean, if the Debt Commission wants to save $1.7 trillion a year, I know how to do that. Don't do Obamacare. But we haven't been successful right now in getting that through the Senate or getting the president anywhere close to signing that.
Congressman, this may seem like a slightly unrelated question, but I should point out to our listeners that in addition to being on the Energy and Commerce Committee, you're also on its Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee.
Yes, sir.
And just in the past couple of weeks, as it relates to Solyndra, we've heard about the rosy promises being in contrast with the stark reality of the situation there and perhaps at other supposed green energy job sites around the country. Again, with the CLASS Act, what we were billed, of course, as we mentioned at the outset, was this would be a cost savings, apparently designed to get a favorable CBO review before the health care bill was approved and voted on. Are you seeing similarities here between what we were promised and what we're actually getting in some of these major programs?
Well, in the health care bill, it all resulted from one of the Senate committees getting a Congressional Budget Office score in June of 2009, which said they'll cover an additional 13 million people and the cost will be $1.3 trillion. And, of course, everybody threw their hands up and said the cost and coverage now are what we have to focus on, and that's what changed the whole debate and the dynamic in the health care law. The green energy stuff was passed primarily as part of the stimulus bill, and some of that, I don't think it fooled anybody even at the outset. It was just clearly these were political payoffs and funding. Look, if you've got to pump that many federal dollars into an energy program such as Solyndra, it ain't going to be viable in the marketplace ever. I mean, it's just not going to happen. So it's just fantasy, and once again, the government getting in the job of picking winners and losers. We do an incredibly poor job of that. One of the individuals from the Department of Energy who was testifying before the committee last week, who's also in another life a venture capitalist, said, well, this is pretty standard for venture capital all the time. We take risk. Yeah, but not with the taxpayers' money, because the taxpayer doesn't have any choice about this. If I, as an individual, want to go out and put my money with a venture capitalist who's going to evaluate a deal for me and say, it's a little bit of a risk, but I think you ought to do it, okay, that's my money, I'm taking the risk. The taxpayer doesn't have the ability to say, I think that's too risky and I want out of that. We, Congress, has made that decision for them, and in this case it was a very poor decision, and then they continued to pump good money after bad. It's a shame that it took us the length of time it did to find out the problems, but it was so difficult to get information out of the Department of Energy and Office of Management of the Budget. I don't really fault the company, Solyndra. I mean, they were obviously at fault here, but it was the policies and procedures of the federal agencies and the White House itself that caused this problem.
In terms of the explanation of why they happened, do you get the sense that the folks behind these just really believed in these ideas and didn't think the financial outcome would really be the way that it has been? Or is it just a matter of this is what they want to do, and gosh darn it, they had the vote, so they did it?
By golly, they were going to do it. It's a little of both. I mean, I've often asked myself in the healthcare realm, is it incompetence or malevolence? Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference, and in this case, or in both cases, both CLASS Act and Solyndra, the outcome was the same. Bad deal for the taxpayer.
Well, Congressman, we'll certainly stay on top of it. Thanks for bringing it to our attention very much.
Thank you, Craig. Bye-bye.
Texas Republican Congressman Michael Burgess represents his state's 26th congressional district. He's also a practicing physician. His thoughts on the president's health care plan and where we currently stand throughout the debate is in his new book, Doctor in the House. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.